Thank you very much for the invitation, and I would like to stress that it was more than 22 years ago that I arrived from Italy to join the group of Ray, and at the time I knew very small amount of science, I knew no chemistry whatsoever, and my English was non-existent. And after 2.5 years I left, and I still didn't know any chemistry. I knew a huge amount of science because of the effort that Ray and Stu, but also John and Simon spent time with me instructing me. And my English had improved, so what did I actually leave here in Toronto? I think just a list of very embarrassing stories. One that came to my mind was when I found an apartment here in Toronto, and I was very happy because I'd been looking for some time. And then I went to see Ray and said, "Oh, it's fantastic. It's one bedroom. It has a very large chicken." So Ray, being very, very nice, spent the rest of the morning phoning the entire university to say, "Oh, Gianluca is very happy, he's found a very large chicken." And that is just one of the many. But I would like, obviously, to dedicate this presentation to Ray and Stu for all the effort that I made during that 2 years. And basically to say that the ideas that they discussed with me, I hope, didn't go completely lost. After 20 years, I still don't know chemistry, but I have some ideas about photonics. And so I decided to talk today about some sort of analogy and differences between spatiotemporal structures, in particular patterns in photonics and chemistry. So where did all started from? Well, I will talk about the Turing instabilities and on one side, which is one of the models that has been used as the base in morphogenesis for the generation of spatial patterns. And then I will say a few words about where the theory of pattern formation comes from in photonics. Photonics is a modern name of optics. You can replace optics with photonics all the time during this talk. And in particular, the fantastic work of Maxwell, who introduced the idea of electromagnetic waves. So I will show that optical patterns, photonics patterns, are nothing else than Turing patterns, and I will show some techniques that have been done in photonics for their control. Then I will talk briefly about chemical spirals, and then I will show the analogy with optical vortices, stationary, rotating, or meandering vortices. I will say a few words about chemical spots, which in photonics are called cavity solitons. And then, towards the end, something about fronts and droplets. Luckily, at least for fronts and droplets, we have the same name between photonics and chemistry. Indeed, in my abstract, I outlined that many of these things are basically, from the mathematical point of view, the same objects. We simply have the habit of giving different names, either in chemistry or in photonics. You say tomato, I say tomato. So this is just to give an idea about what I'm going to discuss about. Well, in both photonics and chemistry, under certain conditions and above certain threshold, homogeneous solutions, which are homogeneous in space, may become unstable. These instabilities are generally referred, going back to the original paper of Turing, as Turing instabilities. And above these thresholds, you can have a multitude of different spatial structures, stripes, hexagons, honeycombs, or squares, rhomboids, and so on. All of these solutions do exist at the same time, and so they are possible stationary solution of the system, so the system needs to be intrinsically nonlinear, because otherwise you cannot have a multitude of simultaneous states. However, the nonlinearity would simply choose what of these structure is stable and what of the structure is actually unstable. We're going to use that idea for our control methods. Now, This is Alan Turing. So I forgot to mention at the beginning that both the figures that, from my point of view, are very, very relevant at the beginning of this talk are both British from the UK, not particularly treated nicely. Poor Alan was driven to suicide because he came out as an homosexual, which is a dreadful story, as a matter of fact. But anyway, I refer to the work of Turing in the way that Klaus Homburg talked about the Turing instabilities by introducing this linear system. The non-linearities have been removed because the non-linearity are just for saturation. So this linear system is just to characterize the instability. The pattern mode that can be born would grow with to an infinite size. It would be the effect of the non-linearity to keep this growth to a finite level. However, this very simple set of equations immediately gives us the two main ingredients to describe Turing instabilities and Turing patterns. We have a chemical species determined with the density U1. So we have this term here, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, and D1 and D2, as a matter of fact, are all positive quantities. So this quantity would tend to grow, but its growth is stopped by the other variable U2, and it diffuses in space. We have instead the species U2, which instead dissipates, and this dissipation is controlled by the coupling with U1, and it diffuses at a different rate D2. One is recognized as the activator, the other one is recognized as the inhibitor. Now, Turing patterns take place if this quantity here is a real quantity and positive. And so this K square is the inverse of the wavelength of the pattern, which is basically the distance between the peaks of the spatial structures we have seen before. So in order for this quantity to be real and positive, we need to have that D2 has to be smaller than delta over alpha D1. So these are the two essential ingredients for Turing patterns as described by Klaus and Homburg, that there must be a clear activator inhibitor of temporal dynamics, and that the condition of spatial coefficients, there should be a condition of spatial coefficients, D1 and D2, this inequality here, that are either allowing or forbidding pattern formation. As a matter of fact, Turing patterns have been observed in chemistry. I just read because I don't really know what this chemical reaction is. Chloride and iodide ions and malonic acid, SEMA. And the first experiments were done in the group of the Kepler in Bordeaux, and later by the group of Harry Sweeney, very, very close. And these pictures are taken from this experimental result. You can see clearly the formation of regular structures here. When you take a magnification, you actually observe that the position of these peaks is actually regular hexagonal structure. This is even more beautiful in color, and this is one of the stripe structures. There are two very important papers by these two groups in a book edited by Ray and Ken Showalter, who is here, that on chemical waves and patterns, that is a very interesting reading. So let me take just a small digression about the importance of the material edited by Ray. I would say that it's very, very important for anyone in this audience to read Ray's papers and Ray edited books. They are an incredible source of interesting material, as this picture clearly shows. This is Ed Salario and myself ages ago. If you don't believe that this is actually something edited by Ray, this is a magnification of this part that clearly shows this is actually his PhD thesis. And as you can see, we are very intrigued by the material that is present in the thesis. And we have even a better picture about some of the content. This is Ed Salario finding something extremely useful and interesting in in Ray's PhD thesis. This was actually done in Princeton on the year that I left. Now, let me now go back to the main topic, which is I would like to talk where optical or photonics patterns are coming from. And the origin of all of this is one of the most important physicists ever, James Maxwell, Scottish from Scotland, and who obviously everyone knows set the fundamental equations for the electromagnetic field. And here they are repeated. In this case, I'm considering a medium with no magnetic poles and no free charges. So the field D, sorry, I forgot here, there must be a tilde. The field D is the sum of the electric field E plus the polarization or displacement field that was introduced by Maxwell in his treatment. Now, these are the equations for electromagnetic waves. We are dealing with light propagating in materials, and light is nothing else than an electromagnetic wave. So we actually try to combine this equation into a single differential equation, and what we actually do is to use this mathematical equality. So we take the curl of the curl of the electric field, and as you can see, the first term is this one, and the second term contains the Laplacian of the electric field. If we are considering now directional waves with the precise direction z, with a certain frequency omega and a certain wavelength lambda, we consider the electric field with a complex amplitude, because with the carrier, which is a complex exponential, has been taken out along the direction z, the frequency omega, and wavelength lambda. And the final equation that results by combining these equations here is basically of this form. So we have the time derivative of the electric field. Inside this tau, there is also the propagation along the direction z. We have here the polarization field. We have here the second derivatives of the electric field with respect to the two transverse directions. This phenomenon here is also known as diffraction. It was introduced by Huygens. It's just the fact that if you have a wave front of any wave, every point of this front acts as a source of spherical waves. And so the next front is found by putting together all of these spherical waves that are generated from the previous front. And so these are the spatial derivatives, the spatial coupling element of the photonics equations. Just to give you an example, here I'm considering, we're going to see this object later, the optical parametric oscillator. And as you can see, here we have linear terms in the electric field. Here we have the nonlinearity, which it is purely saturating. And here we have the terms of diffraction. So the time derivative of the field on this side, diffraction on the other side. If we are comparing this equation with the one that I showed you earlier of the Turing, for the Turing case, we had time derivatives on one side and the diffusion on the other side of the equation. Here we have time derivative on one side and diffraction on the other side. So, but let's not forget, one of the main differences is that this field, capital E, is complex. So I separated it into its real and imaginary part, and this is exactly what I've written here. As you can see, the nonlinearity that comes from here is purely saturating. So in the same way that Cross and Herberg had done, I'm neglecting now, because I'm just studying the linear stability of the fundamental state. And if Q is larger than 1, one can recognize that this set of equations here reduces exactly to the set of the equation for activator and inhibitor, with no difference whatsoever. But there is a main difference. The main difference comes when we are considering the spatial coupling terms. In this equation here, we see that the variable R is coupled to the spatial mechanisms of I, and in the equation for I with the spatial mechanism of R. So diffraction, a difference from diffusion, mixes the two variables in the spatial coupling term. So now let's forget 1 second about physics. So this transparency is called mathematics, not physics. So I'm making generic coefficients, A1 and A2, positive and negative, for the two for the special coupling terms. For a real diffraction term, A1 is equal to A2 and has to be positive. But now I consider instead the regions in the space A1, A2 to see where pattern formation is allowed and when pattern formation is forbidden. Now you can immediately realize that the answer to this question is a positive yes. The second Turing condition can actually be verified, as is clearly shown in these diagrams. So this was the Kross-Hernberg model. Depending, this is the physical region where D1 and D2 are both positive. Here there is pattern formation, here there is no pattern formation. And for the OPO model, we have seen that there is a clear activator inhibitor temporal dynamics, but also there is, in this generalized mathematical space of A1 and A2, one region of no pattern formation and a region of pattern formation. Obviously, the physics would confine us on this line here. So clearly, there is an activator inhibitor temporal dynamics in photonic system as well, and there are conditions on the spatial coefficients that allow or forbid pattern formation. So I would like to say the conclusion is that photonic patterns are Turing patterns. And indeed, when one observes the experimental observation of patterns in optics, you can see that the pictures are very, very similar to the one that I just described for the chemical case. This is one of the simplest systems that display pattern formation in optics. We have a thin slice of nonlinear material. The phase becomes modulated when the field passes through this slice. This is the modulated phase. In propagating to the mirror and back, diffraction changes the phase modulation into an intensity modulation. When it comes back, this wavefront deposits into the refractive index of this material the information of the spatial modulation of its intensity. So that when the next front comes in, it finds the information of the previous front deposited in and it collects it into a phase modulation and so on. So this system was introduced in our department as transcribed by Willy Firth and Giampaolo D'Alessandro. And so this experiment here is nothing else than the realization of this ideal system by using sodium vapors. And by changing the parameters, one can observe hexagons, rows, honeycombs, but even more complicated structure. The first original work for pattern formation in optics was done by Gilbert Greenberg. Unfortunately, the laser beam that he was using had a small aspect ratio, so he could only see very few spots of this pattern. But later in the early 90s, in particular in the group of Wolf Lang and Thorsten Ackermann, who is now at Strathclyde, all of these very interesting features have been observed. So, chemical experiments and photonics experiments for pattern formation, I would say, have a very common ingredient. One thing that for sure a lot of people asked in the early 90s is the possibility of controlling and tracking of patterns. And in 1996, we invented a very simple negative feedback control method. I discovered recently that the first person who ever spoke about negative feedback control was Maxwell in one of his papers. And so the idea here is very simple. We have a nonlinear material absorbing here, an input of light here. We take a little bit of the output and we feedback towards the input B. But what we do before we actually build up the destructive interference with the input beam is to remove part of its spatial properties. And in particular, what we remove in the Fourier space is nothing else than the Fourier structure of the mode that we want to stabilize. So this is, for example, the filter for squares. This is instead the filters for hexagons. These are the Fourier transform of the patterns that I showed you earlier. So what is happening? That after this very simple Fourier filter, the beam will have all the components that are not a square. When it is destructively interfered with this input beam, it will discourage into the medium everything that is not a square. So it's nothing else than a negative feedback method. So we did our numerical simulation and the system worked a beauty. For example, in this region of instability where patterns exist for this system, the solid lines is where the patterns are stable by themselves. So you have hexagons, you can have stripes, you can have honeycombs, but squares are never ever stable. But we have managed with this simple method not only to locate them but to track them over the entire range of existence of the pattern. So we have been able to continue to do the continuation of the hexagonal curve, the continuation of the honeycomb curve, the continuation of the stripes curve, and so on. Now, one important message here. This has been realized optically because it's very easy with the system of lengths to realize the Fourier space filtering. And obviously, in optics, you have very fast timescales. But this method can be also be implemented electronically for instabilities, like in chemistry, which are much slower to arise. For example, you just need to get a set of detectors of your chemical concentration variable, then feed that into a computer, calculate the Fourier transform, which is one of the easiest things you can ever do, remove the components that you would like to stabilize, and calculate your control signal in that way. So in spite of the fact that this was specifically designed for photonics, it can also be implemented in many different areas of science. So this is experimental results. So this is the starting structure, a lot of spots that are moving in a chaotic way. As soon as we have this Fourier filtering in the control loop, we can either stabilize stripes, or if we put a different filter here, we can stabilize squares or honeycombs and so on. And there has been a huge amount of work done in photonics in the late 90s in several groups, Neubecker, Dentz, Safman and so on, who have realized this experimentally. So I would say that photonics allows for dry hydrodynamics, for pattern formation, and in particular for non-stinking chemistry, which is, I believe, a very important advantage. So let me continue now with the spirals. I try to go a little bit faster, I'm a little bit behind. Let me say this honestly. Chemists are a little bit obsessed with spirals. As soon as I joined the chemistry department in Toronto and went to see other chemistry departments working in spatial temporal structures, many of them were showing me the Beluso-Zabotinsky reaction with these beautiful, beautiful spirals. As a matter of fact, I found recently that this originated much earlier than expected. This is a set of early Irish chemists, 4,000 before Christ, that clearly show the results of their Beluso-Zabotinsky reaction. I think it was called the Shamrock or the Leprechaun or St. Patrick oscillatory scheme. But there has been really beautiful work done on chemical spirals. This is, for example, some experimental results from Harry Sweeney about the spiral tip meandering. So by following the tip of this Beluso-Zabotinsky reaction in time, one can observe this quasi-periodic orbit, and this is a different experimental realization. And these chemical spirals have been studied in a huge variety of systems, in particular through the work of Winfrey, Sweeney, and many others, and Ray included. Now, what are the spirals in optics? Well, spirals in optics don't look like spirals. They look like holes. And so one at the beginning can say, where is the spiral? Well, optical vortices are actually singularities where the phase of the field is not defined. And this can only happen where the amplitude of the field is zero. So it is exactly where the real part of the field and the imaginary part of the field are both of them equal to zero when they cross, then you can have a singularity of the phase. And if you do a circulation of the gradient of the phase around this point, and if this circulation of the gradient of the phase gives you plus or minus 2 pi, you know that you have a singularity in the middle. Now, Since the real part and the imaginary part of the field have to be zero in this singularity, this is why in an intensity experiment you actually observe the presence of an optical vortex as a dark spot. And as a matter of fact, this was the first laser beam ever observed. Maiman, who died unfortunately just a few months ago, when he observed the first laser beam ever, observed it in a donut mode. Now, quite intriguingly, in a quite intriguing way, optical vortices can be are a linear solution of Gauss-Laguerre wave propagation. We can see here the way that this wave propagates in space. It is nothing else with respect to the phase than a corkscrew variation of the phase. This is a surface where the phase is the same. And as a matter of fact, if we consider, for example, this picture of an optical vortex, and we do an interferogram with the same structure, and we resolve not the intensity, but the phase, we actually observe the presence of the spirals. At the beginning of the work on optical vortices, we found vortex crystals. But then later, for example, we found very funny arrangement of optical vortices. Again, they look like holes in these diagrams, and they can rotate in one direction or rotate in the opposite direction. Here, all these vortices have the same topological charge. But also, this is four instances in time, some very irregular motion or meandering, similar to the one that we have seen earlier from the experiment of Swinney. This work was actually published in 1992 and had an amazing lack of fortune, because in order to try to cross the boundary, instead of calling them optical vortices, we called them, in the title and through the entire paper, spiral waves, because we wanted to make a connection with chemistry. The final result is that not a single physicist in photonics and not a single chemist has ever read this paper whatsoever. And the intriguing thing is that recently, in Bose-Einstein condensate, put in rotation around an axis, they have exactly realized the generation of this equal topological charge arrangement of vortices. Let me now quickly move to chemical spots. This is again an experiment on ferrocyanide iodate sulfide reaction. I know some chemistry. Performed by Harry Swinney again. These are the experiments, these are numerical simulations. Instead of observing a regular structure, now there is the origin of these spots, which are localized in space. In this particular case, they actually keep grow and then disappear, they form again, they keep growing and they disappear and so on. And they've been named as chemical spots. But the important thing is that they are localized. They are not connected to any regular structure. We observe something similar in photonics, and we have called them cavity solitons. So we have a bistability between a homogeneous state and the pattern here. So this is the homogeneous state, this is the pattern, and they are simultaneously present through the nonlinearity. And then what is possible to do is that you can start from the homogeneous state, do one peak of the pattern, and then come back. And as a matter of fact, it is really a soliton, because there is compensation between the effect of nonlinearity that is trying to make this structure as small as possible, and the effect of diffraction that instead is trying to expand it. And this structure has been described in the literature for some time now. Just why? Why are these structures relevant in photonics? This is a typical photonic device. We have nonlinear material in an optical cavity. These are two mirrors pumped from outside. This is exactly the same system that I showed you earlier. And the output is completely homogeneous. And then we introduce an addressed laser beam in this position. If the parameters have been chosen properly, one observes the formation of a cavity soliton, a bright spot on top of the homogeneous intensity. Now we can switch off the addressed laser beam, and by magic, since this is a soliton structure, it would survive in the output. And this can be very, very nice, because we can, in principle, address on one side several times with our laser beam and put a matrix of these cavity solitons, and in some arrangement they can have a certain message, or in a different arrangement they can have a different message. So it's a method of performing optical information processing. And so this is, again, our, the system that I showed you earlier, our two-level atom. We, again, observe the same structure of the equation, time derivative of the complex electric field on this side, the linear term and nonlinear terms here. This is the external input, and this is diffraction. And we found all sorts of interesting information for the patterns that are generated by this system, but in particular, we focus in this region here. And in this region here, we have bistability between the homogeneous solution and the hexagonal pattern. So that is exactly the region where we can find this photonic spot. And here they are, a single spot, or a triple spot, or a double spot, or a quadruple spot. And we can find the entire bifurcation diagrams of these structures. This is the same situation in two dimensions. This is just one dimension. This is just to tell you that the single structure is this branch of the bifurcation diagram. The double structure is this branch of the bifurcation structure. The triple structure is this branch of the bifurcation structure. And the quadruple is this one. This has been recently called snaking and is attracting a lot of interest in the mathematics community. Just very quickly to give you an idea that we do observe these things and use them experimentally. This is an experiment on pixels. The area of this object is 200 microns, and here you observe four cavity solitons in this, in the experimental results of this system. But we do something even more interesting. We can do an all-optical delay line based on cavity solitons. This is the idea. We observe, we form with the laser beam the solitons here, and then by putting a gradient in the phase across the supporting laser beam, we move the cavity solitons to a different position where they are actually read by another beam, and so we introduce a delay between the information at the beginning and the information at the end. Needless to say, this is an experimental result that has been recently realized in the group of Tredice in Nice that show exactly this phenomenon. Very quickly, let me now go and talk about photonic fronts and photonic droplets. This is an equation that you probably have never seen before, but you actually have, because it's the one of the optical parametric oscillator that I described earlier. Here there are two quantities, the field A0 and the field A1, where the field A1 at half of the frequency of the field A0. The interesting thing is that the nonlinearity is quadratic, so if you go in the stationary solution, you actually find that there are two possible solutions for the field A1, one with a positive phase, one with a negative phase. And although this system is non-Lagrangian, apart from gamma equal to 1, this basically would correspond to two states that are equally stable and they have exactly the same property, so similar to phase separation in a physical system where the two states have exactly the same property with each other. And the most interesting thing is that this property survives for the large changes of the other parameters which are in this equation. So we can actually think about the solution, the positive solution, a connection with a negative solution, and as a matter of fact, this is the imaginary part. Again, there is a certain degree of topological structure because both the real part and the imaginary part have to be equal to zero in the same place. But this is a one-dimensional structure, not a two-dimensional structure. So in the intensity, this would look like a wall of darkness. And the other interesting thing is that by changing this parameter, capital gamma, we can increase or completely suppress these local spatial oscillations. And we're going to see how important they are in a few seconds. So this is front dynamics for Q equal to 1.5. So in one area, there is one phase. In the other area, there is the other phase. And what you actually see are the walls. And this really is very, very similar to the typical dynamics of phase separation. Here we have increased Q to 2.2. And as a matter of fact, you see that the domain that shrinks to zero forms a structure like a droplet that remains and actually gets stuck to the moving front. And this is nothing else than the locked, oh, first, nil novum sub soli. This was something I did with Ray long time ago in 87, and as you can see, we were studying phase separation in this set of coupled maps. And why are these droplets happening? Well, our bifurcation now is different from the previous cases. We had a homogeneous state that is bifurcated into two homogeneous states with exactly the same property. They are, this is the pi phase symmetry. So this is the domain, the wall that I was describing earlier. Suppose now that you put two of these walls, one close to each other, because of the presence of these local oscillations, they can actually lock, and they form these localized states. So this was discovered and discussed some time ago. But the most interesting thing is that recently, again, Wolf Lang, Thorsten Ackmann, and in a collaboration, we have done experiments on the front dynamics and spatial solitons in photonic system. Actually, in the original title says optical system, but yeah, photonic is my word here. So it is exactly the same experiment that I showed you earlier with the sodium vapor, but now there is a set of wave plates here in order to induce the pi symmetry that I just discussed earlier. And one of the most interesting things is to observe it is possible to form one of these droplets, and because of the curvature effect, you observe that this droplet shrinks to zero. And this is exactly the behavior of a single droplet that is shrinking. And if you find the time evolution of this droplet is exactly given by the T to one half scaling law. But if we are approaching an instability to the generation of a pattern, as you can see, the large droplets start to shrink, then almost get stuck here to form this droplet structure. It starts again, it shrinks, and then it almost stops to form this droplet structure. And we have, I didn't take part of the experiments. I can destroy the experiment in 3 nanoseconds. So these are the curves in the parameter space of stabilities of these droplets. You know, there is an entire family of them, small, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, and a little bit bigger, and so on. And these are exactly the curves that have been identified experimentally. So this purple one is for this structure, the red one is for this structure. And this is by a model that describes the experiments. As you can see, this is the red curve, this is the purple curve. And then even a very simple generalization of this scaling law can give us this set of curves in our parameter space. So in conclusion, I would like to say that the study of complex systems, chemistry and photonics, are sharing a huge amount of common topics. Yes, we have the habit of giving different names to the different structure, but as a matter of fact, I would say mathematically they are the same. The continuation of this song by Gershwin says, let's call the whole thing off. I would suggest let's not call the whole thing off, actually. I think that is very important and interesting that we continue with this exchange of information. There is important cross-fertilization of tomatoes and potatoes, and is beneficial, I would say, to both fields. Photonics models belong to the same class of universality of fluids, chemical reaction, population dynamics, etc. The only important message you have to take with you today is that they are done with complex variables. Now, before I finish, can I actually ask Ray and Stu to come here? Can you switch on the light? So I would have liked to find some souvenirs related to Alan Turing and James Maxwell, but unfortunately, I have not found any of them. But I do remember very intriguing and essential and important conversations about difference of view about the Queen. So, they taught me a lot of interesting things about positive sides of having a queen as your head of state, or not particularly positive sides of having your queen as the queen as your head of state. So these are two spoons with the image of the queen, and I'm sure that you'll be delighted every time you have your tea, you can see the face of the queen.
I use it every day.
Exactly. And so we'll do Ray, because he will be very happy to basically stick the queen in a very hot fluid every time he's drinking a cup of tea. But as a matter of fact, there is something I discovered that Ray likes even less than the queen, and that is London taxis. And so I decided it was a very good idea to provide with a constant image, Ray, of the London taxi. I agree 100% with Ray. It is incredible that the technology of the 30s still wander around the streets of London. They are polluting, they are very uncomfortable, and I really don't know why they survive. But even worse, there is something even worse than the old London taxis. And they are the new London taxis. And you can have, which have been specifically designed to reproduce the virtue of the first London taxi. They are incredibly polluting, they are terribly uncomfortable, they look terrible. I don't know why they do exist. Well, thank you very much.